Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
Welcome in to another edition of Football 52 with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hall. Coach, always great to see you, my friend. You guys are in the midst of spring football, got the spring game coming up this weekend, and then break after that. But I know you you guys are ready to rock and roll for that one coming up this weekend.
We are. I was just having lunch in the dining hall with a few players the other day. I try to eat there almost every day and see if I can find the guys. They usually sit in kind of an area of the dining hall, sit together, and I was kind of surprised. There were several guys that were just really excited after we gave them last weekend off. We're only allowed 15 practices, and we do this kind of four-week schedule with four practices a week, and so that's 16. So we have to – at some point, we have to take a practice off, and so what we do is create a bye week. Anyway, the guys in the lunchroom were talking about how excited they were for this last week of spring practice, which is a great sign because it's not like that all over the country. It's spring ball can be really exciting at first, and then it can kind of get to the point where the guys are like they want to move on. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's finals week. It's they've got a month off or a month of what we call discretionary time coming up. They're looking forward to the season, obviously, but the bulk of the work for spring practice has been done. Depth chart has been jostled. So for them to still be showing excitement, and I even tested it out. Like, you guys aren't just saying that because I'm here, right? You know, and then they started to talk about kind of individual goals that each one of them had, and some things they felt like they still needed to prove. And it was just really cool to hear that.
I want to go back to the cafeteria visits in a second too, because I'm curious how that process is. Because I really love hearing, because you've told us about that in the past too. But quickly, on the spring game, how are you organizing it, and how has that changed over the years? Because I've seen different programs. I mean, years ago, it felt like it was an actual game, and then it kind of turned into, we're just going to situational stuff. Maybe we're not even going to see a lot of those number one guys play a whole heck of a lot. How are you doing that this season or this weekend, and how has that kind of evolved or changed over the last 10 years or so?
Yeah, I'll kind of preface the answer with a little bit of context, backstory, because for years, like decades, it seemed like the NCAA didn't change hardly anything.
Yeah.
I mean, and now it's literally almost weekly.
Mm-hmm.
We get like a major announcement and an emergency email, you know, hey, we got to change pace. And so spring ball, since the time I played until up at about, 10 years ago or 8 years ago maybe, the off season was exactly the same for 20 years. Well, now we have there is kind of an expanded access to the players throughout the season. That's different from when I played. There's an expanded opportunity to do walkthroughs in the off season. And so the risk reward of really grinding out a spring football to the maximum level of contact is not there for any team. So just a background of the rules, from an overview standpoint, we are allowed to have up to 50% live tackling to the ground on six designated practices.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's the rule. I don't have it in front of me right now, but every year I kind of sit down, review the rule, and then plan out our spring practice. We aren't coming anywhere close to that. We're using more of an in-season schedule where we'll play maybe 6 to 8 live plays each Wednesday, and then on Saturdays it's live tackle football. And so anyway, the point that I'm making is our offensive line, we very likely have one of the highest number of returning starts as a cumulative offensive line. We're up in the low 60s. That's incredible. I was reading about Montana a few weeks ago. They have zero returning starts on their offensive line.
Wow.
I mean, this the retention that we've had is like our number one strength right now. And so and we have that at several positions. We have three returning starters, what we would consider returning starters at running back. And so just taking that little piece of our team, and there are other, you know, well-established pieces too. Those guys with 60 starts under their belts, why do we need to see if Jack Z-Ball can improve his game in one spring game of live tackle football? Even though the chances of him getting injured are very small, we can minimize that even more by cutting his snap count, his rep count back to 6 or 8 or 12 or 18 or whatever it is we decide on Saturday. But he is established. He's proven that he's a winner. Could have had many opportunities to go and take his show on the road somewhere else, and he decided to stick with us. So we're going to do everything we can to maximize his development, but also balance the risk-reward potential. And he's just one example.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, it's something where if you kind of know what you got in those guys, you're not going to learn a whole heck of a lot more than you already did just even this season during the spring process outside of the actual spring game.
Yeah, and there's we have a responsibility to continue to develop him. Z-Ball, Matthias Price at running back, these are not finished products.
Yeah.
And we don't want to send the message to them that they're finished products. So we really have, you know, particularly in the what we call the thud portions, the thud practices we have. Thud is like – It's high contact, it's shoulder pads, it's helmets, but we stay off the ground. And if guys get on the ground, we pull them out right away and give them the old finger wag and say, stay on your feet, you know, that protect each other, that kind of thing. You can get a lot of work done, but it's not exactly live tackle football. And so we want to get a lot of work done, but we want to make smart choices on how much live tackle football we play with certain guys.
All right, side question. I still want to get back to the cafeteria thing. Question, though, because this is how it goes. How many throughout the season now, just to refresh my memory, how many like tackle portions of practice do you have now throughout the week?
In a regular season.
In
our spring, I've talked about this before, our spring practice sessions are designed to be game-like weeks.
Yeah.
Our same practice days, same practice times, and tempo. So we go on Wednesday. We usually go 6 to 8 live tackle football reps. It's a goal line short yardage preparation day. The rest of practice, they're still in full pads, but we stay on our feet or attempt to stay on our feet. And the coaching point is always, hey, if you feel like you're going to go down, at that point, we're not coaching. We're not going to grade the film based on whether you won that rep or not. We're going to grade the film based on whether you protect yourself and your teammates around you. What we always say is it's one guy for the other 21. Hmm. So there's 22 guys on a field.
Yeah.
At any given time, and every guy's responsible for the other 21 guys. So stay on your feet, stay under control is the guiding light during that type of rep. And then the game. So that's it. Now we might have, if we're really struggling on certain techniques, we might have what we call some small-sided tackling or blocking to the ground type of stuff where it's one-on-one or it's two-on-two. And obviously that's now you're one guy and you're putting at risk another guy or three other guys or something like that. So it's a way to minimize the risk but maximize the development of the skills.
We've been doing this podcast for a while now, and I don't think I've ever actually asked kind of this type of question of what practices actually look like. Now, me coming from small town USA, high school football practice, I remember, and this was a while ago now, back in the early 2000s, you'd start practice, you'd stretch, we'd have our tackling drills, one guy would run this way, another guy would run at him, and you'd make sure that head is where it needs to be and you're driving to the ground or whatever. Do you guys, stupid question, but is there that kind of thing in college football practice anymore where it's like, hey, we've got 20 minutes of just tackle drills? Because I always wonder that when I'm watching games and I hear the broadcasters, well, there's shoddy tackling out there. And I always go, how often do they actually practice tackling other than in live reps, scrimmage-type reps when you're just going defense versus offense? How often does that happen?
We get quite a few high school football coaches who will come and visit our practices and other places I've worked. It's just a common thing. We as college coaches try to go and visit – and see if we can get a welcome mat from the NFL teams as often as possible. And high school coaches will often come to our place or other college coaches. And that's the number one question a high school coach usually wants to know. How often do you practice tackling and blocking? Because it's the fundamental skill of football.
Yeah.
It really is about tackling. You want any chance to win a football game, you have to develop tacklers and have tacklers. And so we have a protocol of tackling, and I'll just tell you that we have tackling drills that can be done. Guys do it on their knees, so they're never even on their feet. It kind of starts with that, with no pads, and it can be done. You know, you and I, or Brian, Tanner, we can bring them in here. We could do tackling drills right here in this room with zero risk of injury, or almost zero risk of injury. Where to put your face, where to put your eyes, where to put your hands, arms, you know, the body posture, how to get your hips through. And then there are tackling drills that usually when I see an announcer or hear an announcer talk about shoddy tackling in the game, it's actually shoddy defense, because one-on-one tackling should never happen. A defender should always have help coming from somewhere that somewhat restricts the options of the ball carrier. And a defender should know where their help is coming from. And oftentimes when you hear an announcer make that criticism, you'll be watching a defense that's very risk heavy. So they're going to try to overwhelm or pressure the passer, and then they end up having to make one-on-one tackles in the run and pass game because they're overloading a certain part of the field. So there's a real balance to strike as a coaching staff, and as a defensive-minded head coach, I'm always trying to make sure that our defensive staff understands that tackling is on us. There's a schematic part of it. There's a tactical part of it. There's a technical part of it. And we can go all the way from being able to do a non-padded, almost zero contact tackling set of drills all the way to our most the one you're describing, where you just line up two guys and one has a ball and the other doesn't, you run them at each other.
Yep.
We actually have that too, and we call that speed in space, because what we want is for the offensive ball carrier to find a way to get vertical, because when you put 10 other guys on the field, they're all going to be chasing you. So don't sit there and juke. So that's the offensive part of speed in space. It's a 10 by 10 yard box. And then the defensive part is you've got to close ground and continue to move toward the target to take the options away, maintain some type of leverage right to left or left to right, take advantage of the 10-yard box. There are some sidelines and some parameters for the offense, and show that you can tackle in space.
We're not like doing it, you know, I'm going way back, because I don't even think high schools do this stuff. Dudes are laying down on the ground and then they get up and run at each other. That's not happening anymore, right? I'm dating myself a little bit here.
So one of the nice developments since I played, and sounds like since you played, there's just more science and more data.
Because you don't start an actual play
right
with your heads, you know, your heads are both facing each other and you're laying on the ground and you get up and go get each other. I always thought that was the most ridiculous thing ever, because you don't start the action that way.
Exactly. And there are, I think, you're never going to take out the human element of having to kind of, no matter how you structure rules of practice, and the NCAA is pretty good about this, there's still going to be a judgment call by the coach, right? And so the current language, which is really good because it's new language and it didn't exist, you know, back when I was playing, is we're not allowed to create any contact or tackling drill, especially that includes what you would call a two-way go. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about two guys laying on the ground and popping up and just running at each other, that's a two-way go. There's no leverage. There's no gap responsibility. It's unrealistic.
Yeah.
And that's why I go back to what I was talking about with defense. When you talk about, you know, oh, that's really shoddy tackling, the announcer says that. If you see a defender run up to a ball carrier and it looks like he has no idea where his help is, that's shoddy tackling. And so every drill should be designed with a little bit of leverage, that right to left or left to right or inside out, a sideline. And that's what we're trying to create as often as possible. And that does make it a little safer, because then you don't get the – if you just – in the old days, if you just lined up two guys and told them – you know, one's a tackler, one's a ball carrier, you'd end up just going nose to nose because you didn't know what else to do, right? Coach is not giving you any instruction. So, okay, coach wants to see if I'm tough. And then you go try to prove that you're tough.
I always wish that I had the radio questions in my brain back when I played high school football, because I wish I could go back to young Brady and not to be a jerk to a coach and just go, I just want to ask why.
Yeah.
Why are we starting it lying down? Because we're not going to be doing that in the game. Because that would be very odd looking to see. We were eight-man football, to see eight dudes on defense lying down with their heads facing the line of scrimmage, and then as soon as the ball is snapped, we all get up and run around. So I wish I could go back in time and ask my head football coach, any of my head football coaches, that very question.
I'm glad you can't do that.
Probably be booted off the team at that point.
At the Division III level, really at a lot of college football levels, including somewhat ours, but at the Division III level especially, football programs exist to drive male enrollment.
Yeah.
We would, at the University of Redlands, we would often bring to camp 200 or more players. One year we had almost 300. And you cut all the way down to 80 or 90 players. And it was my first year of coaching, and we had a veteran coach. He's now with the Dallas Cowboys scouting organization. But one of the, you know, tryout players came and asked him a question similar to that. And he said instead of answering the question directly, he said, and I was within earshot, he said, "You see that man over there? That's Harry. That's our equipment man. Go turn your stuff in."
So that was, see, that's why. That's why you can't, you don't go back in time and ask those questions. But it's a good advice there. Coach, before I get into, I want to, obviously we talk about UNC football primarily, but I like to pick your brain about the other stuff going on in the, I don't know, the business side of it, the news side of college sports. But I want to go back to this. You talk about those cafeteria visits. I just picture you kind of strolling around in the cafeteria, seeing conversations going on, and then I'm just going to ease my way over there. What's up? How does that process? Because I would imagine you want to walk a fine line there. You don't want to make it you don't want to make it seem like you're forcing yourself into a, "Hey guys, I'm cool. How's it going, fellas? What's you know, what's new in the world with you guys, you know?" But you want to have kind of these organic chats, which I'm sure they turn into that, but getting from that point to ultimately having these fun conversations with these guys or these enlightening conversations, take me through that kind of walk a little bit.
Yeah, there is an art there, right? Because I don't want to be like out of touch and have everybody, you know, right when I sit down, hopefully I'm aware if it starts to be a situation where they're like, "Okay, coach, well, I'm finished up. We'll see you later.
Time to wrap it up.
Yeah. I got to get going to class." And I haven't sensed that. On few occasions where I have, it's usually a guy that I want to feel that way. Like, a lot of the guys that don't enjoy me being around are the guys that aren't really doing it right.
Mm.
And we don't have a lot of that anymore, but I did when I first started here at UNC. It's always been my MO. It's always been my method is to be where the players are around campus, you know, make sure that I usually will take kind of the long walk around to when I'm going to the dining hall or other places on campus, cut through a building. I want to see if I can see guys in their element, you know, and be here, be a presence on campus, be a presence in the community. And yet at the same time, you know, I don't want I pop up around a corner, "What's your body weight today?"
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
"Have you eaten your protein?" Like, it's, I can't have it like that, or else they're going to always run from me, right? And so I really do try to not I don't want to try to be cool or be their friend, because that's unattainable.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to try to be present and be able to just, you know, laugh at their jokes and sometimes just stay quiet and not be the coach, not be the person that's ready with a lecture or something like that, and to talk about things other than football. A lot of the young guys right now are into investing.
Mm.
And so, wow. You know, they've got their Robinhood accounts and things like that, and I like talking about that stuff. Coach Hadley, our defensive coordinator, he likes talking about that kind of stuff. He's a financial advisor as well. He has certification for financial advice and insurance, and, you know, it's like he's motivated in that way. And for a time of his life, he kind of, you know, pursued that a little bit and has maintained those licensures. And so that's just one example of, you know, talking about things.
That's fascinating.
Or the greatest of all time. Is it LeBron or Jordan, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then other times I try to get a sense for, does this player need or want to hear from me about football? Because mm-hmm. sometimes it's just me and one or two other guys. And so I might say, how you doing with your weight gain? You know, if it seems appropriate. But there's a lot of judgment there. I've got to make good judgment and make sure that it's a positive for our team and for me and our players and not a negative.
Yeah, I would imagine there is an art to it. But you also have to be, if you're good at it, you genuinely have to care. You know, because you can feel that pretty quickly if it's just I'm forcing this situation and I'm going to come in and I'm going to, you know, sit in my chair backwards, throw in a backwards cap. You know, I've seen so many comedies about that where I'm just going to, hey, what's going on? You know, but you have to actually care about your players. And obviously we've sensed that over the years during these podcasts with you.
I appreciate that feedback. And that is the fear. There's probably not a day where I will walk over to the dining hall, sit down with the players, and that's not on my mind. Is like, okay, am I coming across here as, you know, too stiff or too loose? Or, you know, it's like, it's maybe not forefront on my mind. I do it every day. It is comfortable. It's somewhat comfortable, but it's definitely something that I want to do well at. And I know that there is a method.
Yeah, I mean, any great company, you know, you're managing your staff and you don't want to be friends necessarily, right. Although it's weird around here, as you know that. Yeah. But you want to be able to make them feel like they can connect with you while also making sure the troops are happy. I mean, you're dealing with not a lot of adults that are used to those kind of environments, you know, football teams and such, but you're managing – In so many ways, you're like managing a company with a bunch of guys that have never been in a company, you know, and you're trying to kind of navigate those waters. So that part of the game, especially the college game, is really interesting.
Yeah. And to some degree, it's what I do all day. I mean, we start every day with a staff meeting, an all-staff meeting, and there's 25 people in that room.
Yeah.
And I'm the head of that room. I'm driving the conversations and trying to get feedback, trying to help guys relax, but also trying to create tension at times. I specifically want to test coaches about what's going on in their position group and what's going on the practice field. I bring about 12 to 18 criticisms every day just from our practice. And I want coaches to defend what's going on the field or acknowledge that they see the same problem. Get into some cross conversation, offense versus defense. And I have to remind our guys all the time, this is what we do to our players. Our players go out there every day, put their very best on the field, and then we bring them into a dark room with each other and criticize them, you know, one by one.
Yeah.
You got to do this better. You got to do this better. And so I want our coaches to recognize that feeling and hopefully it brings us closer together. So I'm always, all day long, walking that line. Everyone on our staff is my friend. I think there's a mutual respect,
yes.
But they're none of them are ever going to be 100% comfortable. And it's part of the problem with hiring friends is to some degree you kind of lose a friend.
Yeah.
Because they will never be able to come sit at my house and truly relax in the way that if they were coaching somewhere else and we got together in the off season and got the families together, it would be a completely different vibe.
Yeah, you might actually become better friends again once they move on or whatever. And then you see them in a different setting and it's like, well, we don't work with each other anymore. So I'm going to lighten up a little bit.
That's, totally different.
Yeah, that's no question.
Coach, Andy Feinstein has become a good friend. And it was one of the things he said when he talked about just stepping away from the presidency is it's time. Like I'm on 24/7. Mm-hmm. I go to a restaurant, I'm still president, you know, and I have, and it changes my behavior. I'm, you know, on campus changes my behavior. And so not that he didn't enjoy that. It's just like, I think there is a time for that. I felt that when I was a head coach at Southern Utah and had, you know, no friends, true friends, ton of respect from all my coaching staff, a lot of love, but maybe, you know, just not that true friendship that you would have when there's not that dynamic of boss and subordinate. and then I go to BYU and regain some of that. Where, yeah. You know, hey, we're all friends here, and we can talk about, you know, we talk about the head coach behind his back.
Yeah.
You know,
like, there's a different camaraderie
with all
the assistants. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And it's expected. And as a head coach, you know that that's going on, right? Like, I'm the boss. I make decisions that not everybody likes.
Yeah, it's a heavy lies the crown, kind of lonely at the top type of deal. It can be that way sometimes, I'm sure, because if you open up too much to assistant coaches or players even, then you know, it might seem like a good idea at the time, but it's like, oh, Coach Lamb is cracking here. Yeah. So, stuff like that could be taking place.
Leadership is heavy.
Talking about leadership in these positions, Coach, I wanted to spend some time talking a little bit before we get into some big stories. Not that UNC is not the biggest story, but the national stories, I should say. Wanted to pick your brain a little bit about the wide receivers. And I know next week we'll kind of look at the cornerbacks as well. But wanted to kind of get a breakdown of your thoughts on guys that are sticking out, guys we should be paying attention to at the wide receiver position.
Again, numeric order.
Yes.
I know you're always sniffing around for depth chart indicators.
I'm never – you are not showing your hands at all in this one. And I thought maybe you were, no, that's not the case.
So I'm going to go down through. I just always – I think I talked about this before, but when you prompt me on this, I pull up the right on the website, our roster sorted by position.
I was like, hey,
in numeric order.
Because I was like, yeah, whoever he says first, that's the number one guy. Yeah. And then you're like, not so fast, buddy. We're gonna trick you here.
So not to discredit the one that I talk about first. no indication on order here, but Dylan Evans he's the lowest jersey number. Wears number two, and Dylan's one of our most athletic guys. He struggled to get on the field last year with some soft tissue injuries that kind of held him back at key moments when guys were, kind of jostling on the depth chart. Dylan's had a really nice spring and really picked up like all areas of his life and matured. And not that he was, you know, getting into trouble or anything like that, but it's fun to see guys. When I can look at 18 months ago, 12 months ago, 24 months ago, and just see a difference, even physically. It's just such a developmental time in these young guys' lives. And Dylan's a really good example of that, like where he was 12 months ago from a health standpoint, physical health standpoint, depth chart standpoint to where he is now. Really exciting. And you know, one of the – he was at the Air Force Academy prep. And
yes.
So in that way, he's a Colorado – you know, type of kid, but he's from Texas. And so also just the way that we're building this team, those guys have to find a way to kind of fit in and blend in and make Greeley and Colorado home. And I think he's doing that. And it's not an easy thing to do. I came from California to go to school in Utah, and there's an adjustment period there, and it's real, and it's a challenge.
On the Air Force side, I mean, a wide receiver coming to UNC, I mean, you guys run the football a lot, but being here, he's got to be like, wow, this is like air raid stuff comparing, you know, Air Force to what you guys are doing.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I mean, I think like most college programs, we're going to lean into what we're good at, and the at least the option to get to a pass-first offense is always there if that's what the defense gives us and we have the right people to do that. That's our best chance to win. Then we'll lean towards that a little bit, try to set up our program to be, you know, 50-50 without any of that information and then lean into what we're good at.
I always put a star by guys that – and a lot of these guys I'm really interested in, but guys I want to interview on the show, on the whole show,
nice.
Because I want to. I have never interviewed an Air Force player or a former Air Force player. I'm just curious about their regiment, what they do, because there's the football, but there's also the military stuff.
Right,
there's school, there's military. I'm curious, and I don't know why I've never had that interview before. So, with your blessing, I might try to reach out to Dylan.
I think that would make for great listening.
That would be a lot of fun. Yeah. All right, let's keep looking at this depth chart so I can figure it out, Coach. Not depth chart, roster.
Sure, Keenan Campbell. Keenan, when we recruited him, we completely recruited him as a developmental player. And he got big in his first 6 months here, maybe up to almost 225, 230 pounds at 6'2", and very athletic. And I told him at that time, I think you could potentially be an NFL linebacker, running back, safety. His heart's really at wide receiver. And he's just buckled down, developed himself. He's actually cut weight quite a bit. He's still big at 205 to 210 pounds. And I still think that his, you know, his number one asset for us right now would be with the ball in his hands. And so I think from a running back standpoint or ways that we can get him the football screens and things like that are going to be a big weapon because he's so difficult to tackle, such a great athlete and explosive and balanced. But he's improving his wide receiver skills every day and his ability to run routes and go up and catch footballs. I believe you'll see Keenan quite a bit on the field this year. Cleve Johnson is another one. Cleve comes from California. He's kind of walked on the program and really is earning a lot of respect from coaches and teammates. We didn't plan on running much four wide receiver sets. Cleve's one of the guys that's kind of pushing to say, pushing us to consider that in certain moments, whether it's, you know, long yardage, 2 minute, et cetera. Are we better off, you know, with another wide receiver on the field? And Cleve is one of those guys that's kind of pushing for that. Evan Morris transferred to us from Northern Arizona, not recruited, kind of just showed up with what they used to call like a blind transfer, which you can't do anymore. But boy, he's really we saw some ability in him last year. He was a little buried on the depth chart. He had kind of a stretch of fall training camp where he just, you know, wasn't as productive as he was during other times. And so I think he got kind of left behind a year ago in terms of significant playing time. He's a bona fide starter for us right now. And we're actually creating personnel packages for him. He's big, very rangy, athletic. And I think we've found the right role for him. I think he's going to work, you know, the over the middle stuff, occasional motion and become a blocker, strong, tenacious in his blocking. Not quite a tight end, not quite a receiver. We had a very good player during the time that I was at BYU, and one of the key players that made Zach Wilson's career was a guy named Neil Pau, who was just, you know, we tried him at linebacker, we tried him at tight end. He was a little thin for both, but a little big for wide receiver. What didn't quite have the speed. And Evan really reminds me of Neil, where just every player that would try to match up against Neil or Evan, you don't want to put a nickel on him because the nickel's going to be a little too small. You don't want to put a linebacker on him because the linebacker's probably going to be a little too slow.
Yeah.
That's where Evan fits, and if we can tap into that, he could be a real weapon
for us.
Keeps
the defense guessing. Yeah. Interesting.
Bennett Wilkes, Wheat Ridge kid, one of our Colorado kids. That's just, you know, he's still young in the program. He wants to play right away. He certainly has that ability. He's one of the fastest players on the team. Works incredibly hard in the weight room. Great student. He's everything. Everything we want to continue to build with these local high school recruits and get them developed into top players. So I think he'll see his kind of first significant game action this year. Special teams, wide receiver, excited about what he's bringing. Jay Berry is a guy we're really counting on going into this year. He's had an injury setback. I don't want to go too much into detail with that right now. Maybe give him the chance to kind of talk more about that. But Jay is a real, you know, regardless, a big leader for us and a great example of a guy who just keeps plugging away. He's fought through injury in the past. He's got kind of a wrist injury that kept cropping up and just holding him back a little bit. But one of the most respected players on our team for the way that he approaches it every day. You may have seen we got about 15 guys that have come transferred to us through the portal.
Yeah.
And by the way, we don't even open the portal.
Like, yeah.
The portal is not part of our recruiting strategy. But Garrett Harstad's a guy, you know, from Loveland High School, went to K-State, played at Kansas State, but mostly special teams. It was in the kind of the receiver rotation and just wanted to play more. And so, you know, he contacted us and a fantastic player. Like, we wanted him out of high school. And so – boy, he's really showing up. He's got a big physical, athletic presence. Another guy, we kind of got to figure out where he best fits. At 6'5", 220.
It's a big boy.
Yeah, it's like, you know, he could play a lot of different positions. I think his heart's really at wide receiver, and so we're starting him out there, and he brings a lot to that position. especially in some of our condensed sets where he's playing that kind of hybrid tight end slash receiver role. You know, if a corner or a safety, they're going to have a tough time getting off of his blocks, right? And then, you know, so when they have to kind of load up to take him on and he slips by him in the play action, there's a great target right there. So really have enjoyed he's made us much better. Silas Kemp, a nifty wide receiver from Thousand Oaks, Ventura College, just kind of some of these guys, these what we call slot receivers, sometimes they can kind of be under-recruited, undervalued, but then they get to a place and you just kind of like I was talking about with Cleve, Silas and Cleve play the same position and they're both – they make us as coaches really have to consider, do we need that type of guy on the field? Do we need this slot receiver? And the answer is yes. It's just how often.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, before – because we don't actively recruit slot receivers, it's not part of our kind of like guiding light of how to build an offense. It's always those guys who kind of push us with their on-field production as they get reps in practice. And Silas and, like I said, Cleve have really done that. Will Corby's a Windsor guy, a wide receiver, and just kind of earning his way onto the team. This has been his first spring practice, first chance. He was a student here this past fall, but delayed his initial full-time enrollment and kind of, you know, wants to stretch out his development potential as much as possible. So smart decision by him. What a great young man. Just the way he shows up every day, all business. And, you know, like he's not even a true freshman until the fall. So it's almost like he's the equivalent of a high school kid. So when he does make plays out there in practice, you're kind of like, okay, Will, you know, like, not that it's a surprise. Like, we know he's a good player. You know, we want him here. But at the same time, he's got so many years out in front of him, another 5 years after this spring, another five springs, so to speak, after this spring. And so really excited about what Will's brought. Marcus Mosier, another guy like Harstad, kind of – you know, went to San Diego State, out of Fossil Ridge. These guys are being recruited by our players. These guys are seeing what we're doing on the field, seeing how the program is being built with Colorado kids. They want to be a part of that. And so Marcus, you know, he knows before he ever showed up on campus, he knows 20, 30 of our guys and probably many more in terms of just how many times they were on the same field in youth football, high school football, et cetera. Marcus is a burner. He was one of the fastest players in the state coming out of high school and really has added a lot. Another big body, 6'3", 200-pounder, and has added a lot to our vertical passing game. And we needed that. You know, with Carver leaving and Braden Monroe, those were two of our deep threats that we've kind of missed out on. And Marcus has really hit the ground running with that ability to get over the top of the defense. Jordan Neeson is a Poudre High School guy, also Adams State, you know, transferred to us from Adams State. Really a hard worker, tough guy, fits in a lot of different positions. We've actually got him – he's listed as a wide receiver on our depth chart, but we've got him playing running back right now.
Okay.
We just added some depth, and I think it fits his body type a little bit more. Obviously can be dangerous out of the backfield because of his receiver skills. So I've really enjoyed him his kind of willingness to do whatever we ask. Luke Womack is another one. He's playing the same type of spots as Evan Morris right now. 6'4", 210-pounder, transferred to us from South Dakota State. He's originally from Oregon. We have some connections there with his high school coach. And so he was looking for a fresh start and still a freshman, redshirt freshman, and playing a big role. A lot of those things I talked about with Evan where it's tough to match up with him and he's a good blocker and a big body, the same type of things. And so we're rethinking our offense on a daily basis because of these big physical receivers. They're not traditional receivers, but it doesn't mean that we can't make them as or more productive than a traditional receiver would be. We just have to pivot to get them on the field.
It seems like, Coach, listening to you, because I know you said you play to your strengths, and obviously it's going to start with that offensive line, which means we're going to try to run that ball, protect that quarterback. But there's been a handful of wide receivers at this point that have kind of had you, like you said, kind of rethinking things. Not that you're rethinking your offense, but just particular sets, particular plays, where it might call to get more of these dudes out on the field, which sounds like a pretty good problem to have.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's a real part of being a I think the high school coaches do it the best because they have almost no ability to recruit, at least most of them.
Right.
You know? And so you have to adapt to what you have every year. But then again, you don't want to be a grab bag offense of the week, offense of the year. You know, you have to have an identity, and then there has to be some flexibility within that identity. And when we have players that can push us in that flexibility, and we feel those opportunities, it's a sign we're getting better. You know, as opposed to, okay, if you just come in with your offensive identity, okay, here's what we are, and we have that, and it will, you know, not really change significantly from year to year. Okay, here's our identity, and then we don't have players that are showing up and showing us opportunities by being productive in practice settings. That's a bad sign. So I really, you know, when I talk about these little receivers or these big receivers that are pushing us in one way or the other, I mean, generally the smaller you are, the more spread out you want to be. And the bigger you are, the more condensed you want to be. And so to be being pushed in both directions by guys that are being productive on the field, that's a great sign for us and a great opportunity.
Yeah, well, it just means more work for you guys in the lab once spring football is done, trying to figure all this out with the film.
I thank you for that. I hate that analogy.
Do you? Oh,
when
golly.
I first got to – yeah, because you got to understand, I preach to my coaches all the time that, you know, execution is a result of doing simple things over and over, not creativity. You know, and so I'm always trying to push us away from that idea that we're in a lab or we're these mad scientists, because I think that's a recipe for disaster.
How about the wood shop? You know,
the
seems a little more simple.
Like, yeah,
you know,
exactly.
We're just in the wood shop. We're cutting wood here. It's nothing crazy.
When I first got to SUU, we had a marketing director in well-intentioned. He wanted to kind of put me on the alumni magazine in a lab coat mixing up some chemicals. And I just said I went straight to the AD because like, I'm a first-time head coach. I don't know whether the marketing director is my boss or I'm his boss or what. But I'm like, here's what he wants me to do. And do I have to do this? And he's like, absolutely not. And so we didn't end up doing it, and I was so glad.
Did you end up doing anything, or did you scrap all of it, or just, it was just this lab coat thing?
You know, my memory anyway is that we didn't do anything. So just knowing how people are, I'm sure that guy put a lot of thought into that idea, and me rejecting it was probably hurtful, and I may have demotivated him.
We're not approaching it.
You know what I mean? But it's just not going to –
I will remember this now when talking about you or tweeting about you. I am going to exclude the use of any kind of like going back to the lab or anything. It's just going to be, you know, we're back to cutting wood. We're back to chopping wood, something like that.
Yeah, you know? we're working here.
Yeah, I like it.
It's just work.
Coach, I know you're going to jump on with Brian today. Tanner's out this week. He's kind of, you know, I don't know, however many weeks, whatever.
Getting close.
He's getting close, so they're preparing. He's preparing, they're nesting or whatever. So you'll be in there with Brian today. Next week, I'm going to save these topics because I want to talk to you about this. Maybe by next week it'll be official, but the 5-year, the 5-for-5 eligibility rule, whatever, right, might simplify some things. I don't know. I want to talk to you about that. And also gambling. I want to talk to you about some gambling, Coach. Not advice or anything like that, but obviously we saw the Texas Tech story with Brendan Sorsby, and I kind of just wanted to ask you, how much of a topic is that when you are these cafeteria conversations or these auditorium conversations where you're sitting down with everybody, how much of that type of big picture, negative, positive stuff are you talking about you know, your team? I want to get to that next week if we can.
Yeah, you bet. I think that's a great topic, and one that really starts at the top of the athletic department. Darren Dunn lectures the whole all whatever we have 350 student athletes every year on that, and it's the first meeting of the year, so it's definitely at the top of the list. But it's obviously not something you want to be harping on every day,
right?
So there, you got to find a balance there. But it's something that our university takes very seriously.
Well, with the emergence of it, I mean, you can easily access it on your phone now. And if you watch sports, every commercial break is going to have some kind of a gambling ad. So unlike us, your student athletes grew up with this. That's been what they know when they watch sports. You know, for us, it's fairly new, but that's been a big part of their life.
The real threats now, I think, are like these apps that aren't quite gambling but what do they call them?
Well, there's
the Kalshi.
There's like futures thing that they're doing.
I was reading an article the other day about a guy that made like $50,000 on the temperature at the London airport.
Oh, no kidding!
But
yeah.
I think they think he went and like held a lighter or a heater next to the the weather station.
Wow.
and then it's an anonymous, you sign up for these apps anonymously and he deleted his name and he's gone with $50,000. What a heist.
That's insane. Yeah, I want to talk
about other people's money.
I want to talk about that. Plus there's the, you can bet now, and they're trying to mess with this, but you can bet on whether a guy's going to enter the transfer portal.
Yeah, it's,
I mean,
the access to betting that these young players have now to really all knowledge is just exponentially different than when I was their age. If you wanted to place a bet, I would have had to drive to Vegas.
There's a process. Yeah.
Find a bookie, in some seedy back alley. It's just not the same, And
yeah.
So the temptation is completely different.
It seems less dangerous. But the way you describe it, that seems like, that's kind of shady.
Right.
But the access and the fact that it is so easy can be more dangerous.
On their phone with an anonymous. So
take your seconds.
Credit to anybody who's, whether they were kind of forced into it. But, in the case of the Texas Tech quarterback, I know we weren't planning on getting into it. But just I want to give a shout out to anybody that's going through any type of challenge in their life that's willing to stand in front of the public and say,
hey,
here's what I'm dealing with. I'm getting the treatment. I'm doing this. Right or wrong or whatever, judge them. That's not my point. My point is they put themselves out there to be judged at that point, and it must take a lot of courage and bravery.
No question. Coach, appreciate you, man. This is a fun one today. We'll look forward to touching base with you next week and kind of recap the spring game weekend and, specifically what's next for UNC. So always look forward to it, my friend.
Me too. Thanks, Brady.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.